Within printed page rests fates unseen, doused in ink and laid between. Shadows lurk within your findings, to other realms and beyond the binding.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Bindings. I'm Max Lopez, and this week I am incredibly excited to cover Stardust by Neil Gaiman. Now, this is, I believe, the third Neil Gaiman book I've covered. I did Anansi Boys and Norse Mythology, and I did those both with my kind of coming back episodes at the beginning of 2022. Yeah, I think that's when I started releasing them, was right away in January. I think I had recorded them maybe in December. I don't remember exactly. We've been on a pretty good haul. I missed last week, but I'm glad to be back with, especially with one of my favorite authors of all time, Neil Gaiman. Now, I'm actually going to be covering Neil Gaiman for the next couple of weeks. I'm going to do Stardust this week, and I'm going to do a few others leading up to when I get to go see him live at the Auditorium Theater in Chicago on May 13th, I believe. It's a Friday night. I'm super excited. Auditorium Theater is a beautiful place. One of my favorite, honestly, it's next to the Chicago Theater in Chicago. It's probably my first or second favorite venue. Those places are really, really cool, and they're so well kept. You know, they just take really good care of those really nice venues, and I really enjoy... I've only seen concerts at either one of them, so this is actually the first time I'm going to go to an event like this. I've actually never done anything like this as far as going to see an author speak. From what I know, he tells stories and does, like, Q&A kind of thing, so I'm really excited to go see him. So I thought, why not reread a couple of my favorites and maybe read a few that I haven't read beforehand. So I'm pretty excited to get into this. Now, Stardust is a reread for me. In fact, this is actually was the original introduction of Neil Gaiman for me when I was younger. And I actually saw the movie first because my sister, for whatever reason, had a DVD, like had the actual DVD of the movie Stardust. And I remember watching it and really, really enjoying it when I was a teenager, like several years before I really got into reading. And I love the movie, and I don't know if I even put it together that it was a book, but once I started getting into books, got into the Stephen King stuff, I found Neil Gaiman through actually knowing about Coraline, and I actually went and read Stardust. So Stardust, I believe, was the first Neil Gaiman book I ever read, and I loved it. I thought it was fun, and it was a good book for me at the time that I read it for the first time because it's shorter, and it was a little bit easier for me to kind of wrap my head around. Because at the time I was also jumping into The Dark Tower by Stephen King, which was something that, like, you know, luckily those books kind of pace you getting into them. So they're a little bit, you know, step by step, Stephen King preps you to be able to wrap your head around some of the more complex and intricate ins and outs of that story as you go through it. But Stardust, it's really exciting to cover it because it was so integral in me getting into this genre. I wouldn't say maybe getting into it because I always liked the Lord of the Rings, but continuing to kind of delve into new authors, I would say, is the best way to put it. So this book was actually published in 1999, so just a few years before the movie came out, and the movie adaptation is fun. It definitely is, you know, it's a short story, so I feel like they were able to capture it pretty well. I will tell you, I have not seen it since I watched it when I was a teenager, but I remember really, really enjoying it. Robert De Niro's in it, which he plays the Sky Pirate. I forget his name off the top of my head. Not super important in the book. A little bit more relevant in the movie, as I remember. In the book, we'll get to it in a little bit. Things kind of go by very, very quickly, which is actually kind of a good thing as far as what this story is supposed to be. Now, this is actually preceded by another really great book called Neverwhere, which I highly recommend reading. It was published in 1996. I actually read that in the summer of 2019. When I was in England in 2019, I spent about 3 months there, 2 or 3 months there, and I got like obsessed with Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman, and I was just reading a bunch of their books that I read. Neverwhere, and it's really cool because it takes place within London, And it was just kind of fun to be in the city where the book is actually taking place and being able to kind of have a really good point of reference. Neverwhere, awesome story. I will plan on covering that eventually because I really enjoyed it. I've only read it once. And it was actually preceded by American Gods, which came out in 2001, which I would also like to cover. American Gods is one of those stories where I think I would like to get somebody on here to talk about it with. It would be only a sec. I've read it only once. Watched a little bit of the show. It seemed pretty good to me, but it never got back into it. I loved American Gods when I read it for the first time. It blew me away. And being from the Midwest plays a very important role in different parts of that story. And I was, again, with the landmarks, which, you know, Gaiman does this incredible job at making things so real to you who maybe have never seen a setting, and makes it even a stronger connection for those of us who have experienced the setting that he uses. And I love that about his writing. It's a really, really intricate part that kind of just builds that visualization in your mind as you read, which is so, I mean, that's what separates a good author from a great author, in my opinion, is being able to turn that book into a movie. And Gaiman does that. In my opinion, he's one of the best at that. It's just incredible the way he's able to create a visualization in your mind. I honestly feel that with a lot of his stories, the way that he writes the visualization, there is still room for interpretation, but he guides you in this way that I feel like a lot of us who are reading these books are visualizing it in the same way, because he's so detailed, but he's so precise. He doesn't linger, and Stardust is a great example of that. This is the perfect example that a fantasy book does not need to be 400 pages, 1,000 pages long. This book is 230 pages, and it's such a sweet spot of giving you exactly what you need from the genre, while at the same time having intricate ins and outs. Like, you believe that this world is bigger than even what he shows you here, just based on what he gives you. Whereas, like, in the Tolkien books, or in Stephen King's Dark Tower, or in A Song of Ice and Fire, or even in his Dark Materials by Philip Pullman, it's so detailed, and they're longer books, and it's a longer story, and the world takes time to build, and it builds over time, and by the end of it, you have this grand scope of this thing that seems real to you, where in Stardust, it truly seems just as real. It's just much shorter, and you're not left wanting any more or any less than what Gaiman gives you in it. And I just think it's such a beautiful, well-written story that can really captivate anybody. It is for adults, without a doubt. It could be censored to be for kids. Like, it's not super inappropriate, but he says a couple of swear words throughout it, and sex definitely plays a role in a few different parts. But it's amazing. I really, really enjoy it. And, you know, I've talked about the reading ego before. There's nothing like a nice short book that, like, you can burn through really quick and make yourself feel good about reading a book in a day or two. And Stardust is very much that. So, essentially, this I would say Stardust takes place in about the 1800s is what it seems. I don't think he puts a specific year on it, but somewhere in the 1800s in England. And it actually takes place in a village called Wall, which is north of London, which I think just about everything is north of London, because I think London, I believe, is very south in England. So the village of Wall is just north of London. And it's called Wall because there's actually this wall that breaks up the village, that the village ends at, that nobody's allowed to pass because it leads into a place called Ferry. And there's actually guards who guard it all the time. And Ferry is very much like a fairy world. It's a fantasy world. You know, it's kind of unclear whether or not, like, everybody is totally aware, or if they believe it to just be a myth. But everybody is certainly frightened of going across the wall. And it seems like most people are pretty, you know, stick to their guns. They don't go over there. Now, every 9 years, a fairy market actually comes to Wall, and the people are kind of able to interact a little bit with the happenings and goings on the other side of the wall, where these kind of magical people come over and sell their goods and wares to the people of Wall. And I'm sure people from other villages come around to go to this market. It only happens every 9 years. Now, at the beginning of the story, it just happens to be, you know, that 9-year mark where the fairy market is coming, and you're introduced to a character named Dustin Thorne. Dustin Thorne is kind of traveling amongst the market, and he ends up finding this woman who is in chains, and they kind of have this little romantic relationship. Long story short, she leaves, he ends up going off, living his life, marrying this woman that he loves, and 9 months later, a baby shows up at his door, and it is his son, Tristan Thorne. Tristan Thorne. This confused me the first time I read it, and it didn't confuse me, but his name is Tristan. T-R-I-S-T-R-A-N. Which, you know, you want to just say Tristan. Every time you see it, you want to say Tristan, but it's Tristan. Kind of hard to say. It's like Christian. No, it's not like Christian. It's like Tristan. I don't know. Strange word to say, but that's his name, Tristan Thorne. And this is where, like, the whole time at the beginning, you think Dustin's going to be the main character, and Dustin's not the main character. The main character is his son, Tristan Thorne. Now, the story goes by very quickly, and 18 years passed, and Tristan is a 18-year-old man. Now, he's in love with this girl named Victoria Foster, who seems to be like kind of the apple of every 18-year-old boy's eye in the village of Wall. And Tristan is very, very fond of her. Now, he's kind of like trying to put his moves on her and everything, and trying to get her to eventually take his hand in marriage or what have you. And they're hanging out together, and they're looking off into the distance, and they see this shooting star shoot across the sky and like clearly crash to the earth. And he's kind of pitching like, well, what can I do for your love? What, like, Victoria, what would it take? And she looked out and she says something along the lines of, if you get me that fallen star, I will give you whatever your heart desires. And he takes that to heart, 100%. And he goes off, and this is where his adventure begins, and Tristan crosses the wall. Now, Tristan is unaware that his mother is the fairy from the fairy market that I discussed earlier, and so he just kind of goes off, and he has no idea about any of this. You're very aware of this from the very beginning, because he's, you know, he's Dustin's son, and he gets left on the doorstep, and he's definitely not the son of the woman that Dustin marries. So you're very aware of it, but he is not aware of it the whole time. And this is where his adventure begins, and he crosses the wall into the fantasy world of fairy, which is awesome. And that's pretty much where I'll leave it as far as the story goes. That's pretty much just a setup for the beginning. You know, you give it away too much with these short books and you tell the whole story, and that's really not what I'm trying to do. And all I can say is it's incredible. It's really awesome how much he could pack into 230 pages. Again, it's not necessary always to push these incredibly long fantasy stories. You can still tackle the same kind of concepts, the same sorts of ideas, the same sorts of settings, the same sorts of stories without actually going for something so massive. And I think that's something that's really important for young writers to be aware of, because I think we can often look at these, you know, our idols, our Neil Gaiman's too, our Stephen King's, our George R.R. Martin's, our J.R.R. Tolkien's, you know, whoever it may be, and look at these big stories they've written and think that that's what you have to do and that's what you have to do first. And really, it's like, just get out stories, you know, find those really fun stories to write. Stardust is fun. That's what it is. It's fun. It's a great read. It's entertaining. It's quick. It gives you what you want while not making reading kind of this tedious task. We've all read a really great book that lingered, you know, that was like, you know, this is awesome. And I'm not willing to bail on this, but man, it's so long. Like, it's just so long. And sometimes you don't have that feeling. I'm going to give you an example. This is not an example for me, but this is an example for some, I know for a fact. The Stand by Stephen King. I consider that to be in my top 5 to 10 books of all time. I consider it one of the greatest books that I've ever read. I can never make the claim greatest book ever written, because I would have to read pretty much all the books to make that claim. But not the stand draws on for some people, and like I know why. It's over 1,000 pages long. There's definitely chapters that are just to build the world, build what's happening in the world because of the virus. But that's not for everybody. Is that for me? Yeah, that's for me. I want that. I want that out of the stand. Do I want that out of every book? I don't. I absolutely don't. I recently read Carrying Comfort. There will be an episode of Carrying Comfort coming out after the Neil Gaiman series, because I want to be able to lead up to me going to see him at the Auditorium Theater. Carrying Comfort, it's too long. It's just too long. There's chapters in there that I don't feel are absolutely necessary. Is it good? Yeah, it's incredible. The story's amazing. But is it too long? I personally think so. And I'm probably going to talk a little bit about why it's too long in the episode as well. So I picked two big themes from this story. And I do kind of feel like they were themes that were intentional by Neil Gaiman. The big one, one of the big ones was sometimes what you need most is right in front of your face. And this is something that is projected through Tristan Thorne's character. And it goes with that like living life with horse blinders on mentality that we as humans have. And it's not wrong. It's not wrong to be like that. In fact, it's almost impossible not to be like that sometimes, because it's almost like a defense mechanism to just shut out the rest of the world and just stay within your comfort zone, because the rest of the world can be scary. It can be harmful to us, you know, both physically and mentally. And sometimes it's easier to toss up those horse blinders and say, I'm just going to block it all out. But the wrong thing about that is that there are so many beautiful things on the other side of that horse blinder, along with bad things, but there's so many beautiful things, and it could be right in front of your face. The one thing you need the most could be right in front of your face, and you could be missing it the whole time because you're purposely blocking everything out. Whether it's out of fear, whether it's out of just pure obliviousness, it doesn't really matter. You need to lift those up sometimes. We need to lift those up sometimes. Whenever I use the word you, don't think that I'm counting myself out of any of this, because I certainly am counting myself in for all of this kind of stuff. This is just humanity in general. And it's interesting to look at it. Sometimes I start thinking about, like, I put that me, that pronoun of myself on things, or you as an individual, but it's really important sometimes to look at humans as a collective whole. And as a collective whole, we very much have horse blinders on right now. It's social media. It's all technology just in general. It's podcasts. You know, maybe it is. It certainly is just forms of entertainment and forms of content that we are choosing to take in and choosing to cover up. I do it all the time. Absolutely. I mean, it's probably why I read books so often. Right? Because it's easier to live within this world and enjoy ourselves within this world than look out and say, like, man, the world is, you know, it seems to be crumbling around us. But amongst the rubble, there's beauty, and it's important to look out and see that beauty. And I think that whether Gaiman did that intentionally or something I'm picking up, I think it's a beautiful lesson that you can pick up from this story. Another one, the second one I found, is that love can be found in strange places. And I think that relates directly to that last theme, but also love just in general can be found in strange places. And it's important to lift up those horse blinders and continue to look for love. And love does not need to be that romantic love. It can be love in so many different ways. And people share it with you, and it's important to accept it and be willing to accept it, because the world, some people in the world and some aspects of the world want to give you that positivity and want to give you that love back. And it's important to recognize it and accept it and not put the blinders down and be like, I just don't see it. I just don't see it. It's just not there. Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. That's just not the truth. I don't think that's really the truth with anybody who projects good into the world. So I thought that was an amazing theme. And I think these are so deep for such a short story. It makes me so happy. It's just such a lovely book as far as just, it's uplifting. It's so uplifting. And I think it's, It's magical. I will go as far as to say that it's magical. And that theme of love can be found in strange places. It actually made me think of one of my favorite lyrics from a Grateful Dead song called Scarlet Begonias. Now, the Grateful Dead, number one favorite band besides Fish, and I would say Grateful Dead was kind of like my first love with music. The Grateful Dead's music has always touched me in such a special way as far as the mix of Garcia's music with Robert Hunter's lyrics. And this particular lyric by Robert Hunter from the song Scarlet Begonias has always connected with me. I actually write it on the dry erase board at work all the time. It's been there for like 3 years, and nobody ever recognizes it, but it relates to that theme. Love can be found in strange places, and the lyric is, once in a while you get shown the light in the strangest of places if you look at it right. And I think that is so clear. That goes with both of these themes. Like, look for the light, look for the good in the world, and you know, it might not show itself right away, but it's always there. It's always somewhere. And even when things seem like they suck, you can find it. You can find it. I promise you, you can find it somewhere. It's in strange places. So look in the strange places. Don't be afraid of the weird. You know, don't be afraid of the evil either. You know, confront it sometimes. Do what you have to do to face it and move on from it and overcome it, because there's light there. There's light at the end of the tunnel. That tunnel might be, you know, 1,000 miles long, but there's light there. So keep going to it. I love that. I thought it was such a cool theme. I thought it was so well woven into this story, and I really, really enjoyed it. Now, there's one last thing that I wanted to touch on, because I feel like it's kind of this thing that gaming uses all the time. This idea of a passage between worlds. I'm talking about the gate, or it's like a block or like a brick fence kind of deal, and there's just a passage you can go through it, and it's from our material world into this fairy world, right? And gaming, I feel like, kind of touches on these concepts quite a bit. There's a bit of it in Neverwhere. There's a lot of it in American Gods. And it's just the idea of like being able to go from our realm to another realm. And I think it's just such a cool concept, because it's so fantasy. It's so far out. And I just think it's so, so incredible. Just the doors of perception, right? If you've ever read that nonfiction book by Aldous Huxley, it's just breaking the veil between what we know as reality and what could be reality. Or, you know, we look at life as we know it, but what about life as we don't know it? And I think these concepts of passages between this realm and the next, I've just always loved it. It's almost like thinking of, you know, is death that passage? Is death that doorway from this realm to the next realm? And, you know, I truly don't know what I believe. I don't think I set anything in stone for the afterlife or anything like that, but I'd be lying if I did say I wasn't curious. And I think anybody would be lying if they said they weren't curious. And I think that concept of the door, the gateway between realms, is something that I'll always hold on to. And I will always love writers like Neil Gaiman and Stephen King for pushing that concept, the passage between realms. I absolutely love it. Now, moving forward, I'm going to read a Neil Gaiman book I haven't read before, another shorty, which I'm excited about because I'll probably be able to knock it out pretty quick. Now, I'm excited about this. The Ocean at the End of the Lane. Maybe I did read this. I think I did read this. Either way, I'm going to reread it. But The Ocean at the End of the Lane is a novel. It's very short. It's only like 200 pages. Let me see. It is 178. Ooh, I'll knock that one out pretty quick. Now, I'm excited about this because it's only been in England, I think, just in London, but this is a play, and Neil Gaiman's been promoting it a ton on his social media. I think he might have even wrote like the stage play for it. I hope it comes to the US because I would love to see it. I mean, I just want to see anything Neil Gaiman. And so I'm excited to read this. This is very much, I think, like a realistic fiction book. I'm not sure. I don't know. See, that's what I'm saying. I don't remember if I read it or not. I definitely checked it out from a library before I checked it out from this library. But along with that, I am going to be covering Good Omens as well, which will be a reread for me. And Again, one of my favorite books of all time. I absolutely love Good Omens. One of the most you'll ever laugh from reading a book. Absolutely. So, a lot of fun on the horizon for me. I can't wait to cover some of these books. I'm sure you see a lot of the joy that I have when I cover an author that I'm like really, really into. And I don't, it's not that that joy doesn't carry over to like some of these newer ones that I'll read and people that I don't like, that aren't like kind of my big three or four authors, but I have a certain thing for the, for a few of these people. And, Neil Gaiman is certainly one of them. So after I go see him, I do plan on doing an episode that's going to just be kind of talking about what that experience was like. It won't necessarily be a full 25, 30 minute episode, but I'm going to cover it just so I can talk, really, probably just for my own benefit, just kind of talk out with myself what it was like, because I plan on being pretty darn excited for that experience. I'm already really excited. It's going to be a good May. May's got a lot on the horizon for me. I'm pretty excited about it just in general. So I mentioned the library. Great segue. Go get a library card if you don't have one. Why buy books? I mean, buy books too. Support your authors and everything like that. But go get a library card. Libraries are great. I love those places so much. They're the best. And, you know, as always, I'm Max Lopez, and this is Beyond the Bindings.